Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear broadcast. I'm Susan Laris and Danz, and I want to wish everyone a happy April Fool's Day. And today we're going to have some fun on the show. I have an absolutely wonderful returning guest coming back to the show that I think is absolutely perfect for today, which will make him laugh because we've been telling fool jokes for days now, I think. And his name is Mark David Gerson. Mark David is someone I have been privileged to know for a while now. He is an award-winning author. He is a filmmaker, and he is a creativity catalyst. Mark David has been teaching and coaching and doing workshops for over 20 years, and he guides people in their creative work. Now, he is also very much engaged in his own creative work. He is the creator of the Quintana trilogy of fantasy novels, and I know that he has just finished the last two books of the series, and those are soon to come out, and he's developing all three into a feature film project, which is actively in development, with the first film expected out next year. And the first book is called The Moon Quest, which was a winner of multiple awards. And then in the realm of creativity, Mark David's book, The Voice of the Muse, Answering the Call to Write, has inspired many people, and might I add, including me, although it's taking me a while to complete my writings. It doesn't matter. He speaks to us all at whatever place we are in our writing. And he also has an accompanying CD that provides meditations for writers, which is very helpful, and you can also find a glimpse of that online. Mark David is quite the prolific writer. I think he must be one of the most prolific writers that I know. His latest book is Acts of Surrender, a writer's memoir, and he also wrote a book that he has just re-released, which is called The Book of Messages, which is a book of inspiration. Now, the reason why I think that Mark David is so perfect for today's show is because today we are really going to examine what it means to be the fool. And this is something that I think that Mark David and I and a number of people have thought about. What does it mean to be perceived as the fool? Do we care? And usually the answer is no if we are creative people. And what does the symbolism of the fool actually mean? And I think we're going to discover that we can truly be inspired by the fool on this April Fool's Day. Isaac Asimov once said, "That, of course, is the great secret of the successful fool, that he is no fool at all." Edgar Allan Poe said, "I have great faith in fools, self-confidence, my friends will call it." And William Shakespeare in Twelfth Night said, "Better a witty fool than a foolish wit." And I could go on with fool quotes. I may include a few more. I'm going to bring Mark David on in just a sec. Just want to make a note that there is an open chat room today. If you don't see it, I know that I've had the experience where we have a lot of live listeners, and yet they don't seem to be getting into the chat. So if you are interested in being in the chat, I know many of you are listening in your own players, and that's great. But if you do have an interest in being in the chat, you may need to refresh the show page to see it, and you also need a Blog Talk Radio account to actually type in the chat, although you can certainly listen in. And Mark David and I are both in the chat today, so So we are happy to share in the foolery there. Now, without any more delay, I really do want to welcome my friend, my colleague, my inspiration, and actually someone who was once my coach onto the show, Mark David Gerson. Hello, Mark David. Welcome back.
Great to be here, Susan. Great to be the featured fool of the day.
Well, you know, I couldn't imagine anyone else to bring on. I'm not sure. Is that a compliment? Actually, you should consider that quite a compliment.
I will take that as a compliment, as the fool that I am.
And, you know, something I didn't mention in the intro is I do want to acknowledge and thank the Blog Talk Radio staff for recognizing today's show today as a staff pick. And I just want them to know that I think we're both very thankful and honored by that. And so thank you, Blog Talk Radio staff. We most appreciate that recognition. Now, Mark David, let's launch into how would you define the fool on your path? Where does the symbolism of the fool fit into the way that you have viewed your own life and the way you go about your work? What is the fool to you?
Well, that's a huge question.
It is.
And anticipating a question like that, I actually went to the Osho Zen Tarot site while you were introducing the show and pulled up the commentary on the Fool card. I went to that particular site partly because I love the write-ups and partly because that image is one of my favorites, and I'm happy to tell you why in a moment. But here's what they write about the Fool there. If you were to pick the card, this is what you would be told. Moment to moment and at every step, the fool leaves the past behind. He carries nothing more than his purity, innocence, and trust, symbolized by the white rose in his hand. The pattern on the waistcoat contains the colors of all four elements of the tarot, indicating that he is in harmony with all that surrounds him. His intuition is functioning at his peak. At this moment, the fool has the support of the universe to make this jump into the unknown. Adventures await him in the river of life. The card indicates that if you trust your intuition right now, your feeling of the rightness of things, you cannot go wrong. Your actions may appear, quote, foolish to others or even to yourself if you try to analyze them with a rational mind. But the zero place, the fool is the zero number in the tarot deck, but the zero place occupied by the fool is the numberless number where trust and innocence are the guides, not skepticism and past experience. And I like that for a number of reasons, because pretty much the way I hesitate to use the word chosen to live my life, we can talk about choice later, really speaks to much of that. And it's not like I found a fool card and said I'm going to be that. It's more like this is the way my life unfolded, and there was a fool card, or the fool archetype, rather, to back that up.
I think that this concept of releasing the past and not clinging to the past and, you know, literally being on the edge of a precipice, and yet you're taking a leap of faith, isn't it? I mean, I really see that symbolism in what you read and in your life, that leap of faith symbolism. Although the fool hasn't leapt, he looks prepared to leap.
Well, the reason I like the fool image on the in the Osho deck, because in most traditional decks, the fool has one foot still on the precipice and one foot off as he is preparing to take the leap. Mm-hmm. If you look really closely at the fool in the Osho deck, and if you Google, Osho Zen Tarot the Fool, you'll see the image. I also posted it, I think, when I was talking about today's show on my Facebook page yesterday. It looks like the foot is no longer on the precipice,
right.
Say that, on the precipice, but has already left, that both feet are, in fact, in the air. And that, to me, whether I always like it or not, seems to better exemplify my path than the one foot still on the precipice. It's, my journey seems to be, for better or for worse, it sometimes feels for worse, even though it always is for better, one of always in the air, of
yeah.
always already having made the leap. And it is a leap of faith. It's a leap. It's one leap of faith after the other, after the other, after the other. And that's. And I talk about that in The Voice, the Muse. I seem to recall some kind of writing something like that. But really, whether we're, you know, living what I like to call an authentic life, or writing from an authentic place, really is a journey onto the blank page. The blank page
yeah.
of the story we're living, with a blank page of the story we're writing.
And I know in your, the way that you express that often in your work is you don't draw much difference between that, do you, Mark David? Our art and our life are very much integrated, aren't they?
They certainly are in my life. And I suppose in terms of my own history, there's a particular reason for that. My spiritual awakening and my creative awakening happened almost simultaneously. And although I had been writing for a while, I certainly had not been writing creatively or from a deep inner place. And the creative awakening really sparked the spiritual awakening. And if you go on my website and see my so-called rules in quotation marks for living and rules for writing, you'll notice that they're almost identical. Because I really do believe that when we create, whether it's words on a page or images on a blank canvas or notes on a music on a page, we are engaging in the same kind of experience as when we choose to live a creative life. By
yeah.
a creative life, I don't mean being, you know, a creative artist necessarily. I mean living from that place of intuition, living from that place of open-heartedness, living from that place of trust. The Osho write-up talks about trust as well. A fool is
yes.
one who goes on trusting against all his experience.
And, you know, I don't know if it's in the Osho image. I don't have it right up in front of me, but in some of the images and in the one I put on the page, you see this little dog nipping at the heels of the fool.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all can interpret this in our own way. And sometimes I feel like that's convention. You know, when
mm-hmm.
we follow our heart, there may be those who are nipping at our heels. I had someone tell me recently that I should go get a job. I have a job. Well, because, you know, many of us on the creative spiritual path have stepped away from, you know, quite well-paying positions. I know that in your past, Mark David, you had a position of leadership, a traditional position, and so did I. I mean, and I think that there are those who will nip at our heels when we choose to live the creative spiritual life and do foolish things like I'm doing in the middle of the day, a blog talk radio show, and not follow that convention. How do you view that? I know that so many of us strike out and we don't listen to the dogs nipping at our heels.
Well, I think there's really, I like that interpretation of the dog, but the other interpretation, or another interpretation of the dog, is that the dog is, dogs operate on instinct. They don't operate on, they don't think things through. And so
mm-hmm.
the dog is, in fact, chasing the fool off the cliff because it's an instinct.
Ah, I like that,
that's
too.
That's pushing him forward. But yes, absolutely. Conventional wisdom, and I think that's an oxymoron right there, but conventional wisdom would have us operate in a certain way. And it's in think of the word conventional, and think of the first part of the word, which is convent. What do you do in a convent?
Mm-hmm.
You're cloistered. And you operate according to, generally, very strict rules and regulations.
Yeah.
And you're not permitted to stray from that very tight discipline, that very strict discipline. Whereas outside the convent walls, if you want to use that metaphor, you have the freedom to, you know, act as a fool, if you will, act from your heart. So do we choose to live, you know, from a place of what I call in the voice I use, hard discipline, or do we choose to live from a place of heartful discipline, where our discipline comes from within ourselves, not from some arbitrary outside force?
I really like that analogy of the rules of the convent, because, you know, the irony of your rules, the rules you choose to express and live by, I mean, the first rule is that there are no rules, true?
Yes, it's also the last rule in case you forget by the time you get there.
and there's a kind of irony to foolish wisdom. I mean, in fact, the words themselves express that we could live in this state of there being no rules, and yet we can express rules. It's just, how do we view those rules is the question. Because you don't hesitate to provide some.
Well, I think you know, if you were to look at those rules, I don't have them in front of me, but I will in a second. The first rule is there are no rules, which, of course, like, as you say, is irony. The second rule talks about being in the moment. Because what works for you today, which we are all tempted to, you know, concretize into a rule for all time, because we like certainty, may not work tomorrow. And so, yes, whatever works today is great, but be open to something different, working for you tomorrow or working for you in the next moment. And again, those are the same whether we're creating a work of art or creating a life.
Yes. I think that it frees us, Mark David. It frees us to experience and attempt things that people may say, you can't do that. You don't have a degree in that. I've heard that more than once, although it certainly doesn't stop me. I mean, we may have degrees, but maybe not in the thing that we're pursuing. Yes, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm very much, you know, poster boy for that. I don't tell too many people this, so of course no one is listening to me right now. I have a business degree.
Uh-huh.
Well, yes, I have a college degree. It's a degree I never really used for much of anything, and I'm sure there were benefits to me in that. But I pursued a business degree at the time because I didn't know what I wanted. It seemed practical. I hated almost every moment, every minute of it. And nothing I have done since, professionally, for pay, for passion, successfully, do I have any recognized accreditation for.
Yes.
Or a certification for. I actually lie. I am a Reiki master. That is about as far as it gets. But I never actually used Reiki for a Reiki practice. Reiki became a stepping stone for me to develop my own modalities. So it's not like I got a Reiki mastery and then put out the words of Reiki master. I never did. So, you know, our authority, comes from can come from within. Now, I'm clearly not too keen on having a brain surgeon who does not have, you know, any medical degree operating on me.
Yes, there are some things that require years of study. I would agree.
But frankly, having said that, if someone, and I don't know that this person exists yet on this plane, but if someone were in fact intuitive enough and in tune enough and trusting enough then I have no doubt that, medical degree or not, he or she could perform the necessary surgery. Having
yes.
said that, I don't think that person is out there in this moment, and so he ain't touching my head. So, but, you know, nothing truly, I mean, the impossible, a concept that we have created, is in fact that, a concept we have created. So you tell me you can't walk through a wall, and I say, no, as you are right now, you cannot. But the wall's solidity is an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bunch of atoms bouncing around. There is no wall there.
That's right.
So why can't you walk through it? Why can't you walk through it?
There
you
may
know?
Come
I mean,
a day when we can do that. I mean, and that'll be...
Well, let me change your words slightly. We can do that. There may come a day when we recognize that we can do it.
Yes. We limit ourselves so with the rules that we think we live under. And,
that's right.
And, you know, that's a really good example where we think that physical reality has a lot of rules, and yet listen to a quantum physicist talk about physical reality, and you'll realize that the rules that you thought existed are not quite what you thought they were. And so the more, what I find so interesting about the world we live in today is that even scientists, if they truly are interested in knowing the nature of reality, are beginning to discover the nature of reality, which is fascinating, because it's such a confirmation for people who have known this and talked about this for a very long time. And I'm not saying we need that verification either. I think some of us seek it. I think some of us love it when there's some kind of proof. You know, I wonder how many of us, Mark David, there are who start in these conventional places. I mean, I can hardly believe I have a math degree, and then I got a master's in computer science, and I worked in that career for a long time, and longer than I think you used your business degree. But, you know.
Yeah, well, I never used it, so yes.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And so, well, I know you had some conventional position long ago,
right.
But yeah, I mean, we both worked within convention, and we're both parents too. I mean, that certainly plays a role in both of our lives, I know. You know, I don't know what it is. I wish we could somehow communicate, because I'm not sure I could, but maybe you could. It had to have been the spiritual awakening. But what was it? I know there are people out there listening who are yearning. They know they're in a career, in a job that may support them well, and yet it's not what their heart is telling them to do. And how is it that we really make that step? Now, you know, I have found that sometimes we're pushed. I mean, I really did have a dog kind of push me. Although it wasn't a talk, but I mean, that happens a lot of times where something happens that is unexpected, and we think it's a setback, and yet it's actually pushing us towards the dreams of our heart. And I think that all setbacks are actually like that. That's what I've come to believe, although you don't always see it right at first. So how could you speak to that too, as well, to those who are listening who are just, you know, I can feel the yearning. I mean, even when we're on the path, we still have the yearning. The more that we want to embrace all that we can do, I have such an excitement for life, all the things that I can accomplish in the years, you know, the many years I hope that remain. And I share that with the audience, Mark David, your path in that way.
Well, yes, I think that, to kind of recap a little bit of what you said, very often, well, not very often, but certainly often, a setback, a tragedy, something, again, conventionally horrible happens to us that turns our lives upside down. I think that's the key. Something turns our lives upside down. Something challenges the way we have viewed the world, the way we have viewed our world. And suddenly we're forced to stop and reevaluate. And
yeah.
It, through that reevaluation, which becomes a kind of mind-heart exercise, we move off in a different direction. Now that one way it can happen, and something happens like that happens to most of us. A marriage breaks up, a relationship ends, a parent dies, a child dies, a pet dies, our house catches fire. I mean, these are all everyday occurrences, unfortunately, that we all, many of us, get to experience one of them at least once in our lifetimes, and they are, you know, it's the dog. It's saying, wake up, I'm barking, I'm pushing at you. Take a different path, take a different road, leap off the cliff.
Yeah.
Now, other times it happens, I was going to say more gently, you know, it's never gentle.
Yes.
Just because your house hasn't burned down doesn't mean it's gentle. It just means that it's turbulent in other ways, usually in more inner ways. I stumbled isn't the wrong word. You know, there's a chapter in The Voice of the Muse, and one of the wonderful things that I discovered in writing The Voice of the Muse, again, was just how much the life path and the creative path are not only parallel, but pretty much the same. I think one of the last chapters in the book is called The Story Knows Best, and it really isn't so much about the story we're writing knowing best, although I believe that, but the story we're living knowing best.
Yes.
So one of the things that the fool does is the fool trusts the story. The fool doesn't, you know, when I write, I have many conversations about this with people, online and off, I do not outline. In fact, one of my big secrets is that when I was in high school, you know, we had to write essays and compositions and turn in an outline with them, I could not do it. I would write the essay and then write the outline and then turn them in together. So my big cheat is out. But you'll never see an image, a Tarot image of a fool holding a map.
Yes.
You'll never see a Tarot image of a fool holding his iPhone with the GPS out. The fool steps into the unknown constantly because it's in the unknown where the gifts are. Which we were talking about, what's possible and what's impossible. Well, the impossible only becomes possible when we step out of our comfort zone, when we step outside the box, when we step out of what we think we believe and discover what we actually know. And so for me, I was in my early, mid-30s, I guess. I won't say living an entirely conventional life. I was a full-time freelance writer and editor, and that already was a leap off a cliff, although it wasn't a conscious leap off a cliff. I grew to hate my job, a job that I had loved once, so much. Well, that wasn't what happened. What happened was I was going to be promoted into a job I didn't want.
Yeah.
I was assistant director of public relations at a large Montreal university, and my boss brought me to the office one day with this grand scheme, which, you know, again, in conventional terms, I should have been thrilled about, because he was going to make me director of public relations, and he was going to push himself up and build his own little empire. And I left that meeting appalled, not because I had any consciousness, but because at some deep level, I knew it wasn't what I wanted, even though I didn't know what it was that I wanted, and I quit.
Yes.
That was what got me to freelance. And when I was freelancing, again, what I was writing was magazine articles, newspaper articles, corporate and government stuff. So it wasn't exactly, you know, writing from a deep place of heart or soul. But one day I was in freelance editing in a magazine in Toronto, and a full-time colleague came in and bullied me into taking a writing class. creative writing class, and
yeah.
she just wouldn't let up, which was so uncharacteristic of her. So I'm sure that, you know, she
was your dog nipping at your heels.
She was my dog. And that creative writing class workshop was a full day class, became the catalyst for everything in my life changing.
Yes.
So sometimes it's, you know, again, it's you're fired from your job. Your husband or wife or partner leaves you. And sometimes something kind of seemingly innocuous, like you're end up going to a creative writing class, happens, and nothing is ever the same again.
Yeah.
And so coming full circle many minutes later to your question, which was, what do I tell people who feel this yearning? The reason you feel the yearning, or a reason, I don't want to be dogmatic, a reason you feel the yearning is because you sense something is not right with your life and you're too afraid to step off the cliff. And I don't blame you.
Yeah.
The problem with fear is not its presence, because believe me, I've had plenty and still have more than I would like to. The problem with fear is when it paralyzes you, which it did me for many years.
Yeah.
And if you don't want the cataclysm to fall on your head, then it's up to you to take the leap of faith. Start with a small leap of faith. You don't have to turn your entire life upside down in one moment, but you can start to take steps that support a change. Because here's what happens to many people. They let fear of their passion, fear of their soul's yearning, fear of their heart's desire. And when I say heart's desire, I'm not talking about, February 14th heart's desires. I'm talking about deeply rooted heart desires.
Yes.
We let our fear tamp those down, and what happens is at some point they explode in a crisis. They explode. That forces us to look at our lives differently. It can be, again, a job crisis, a relationship crisis, a family crisis. It can be a health crisis. If you want to avoid and avert those crises, or at least take some steps toward them, because there are no guarantees, then listen and trust and step off that cliff. It's not easy. It's not always fun. But ultimately, it's the journey of a lifetime.
Yes. Well, I think, solid ground is, of course, familiar to us. And it's natural to be hesitant to step off the cliff. And yet I keep looking at this image of the fool, especially the one that you provided, Mark David. And the fascinating thing is the fool is not falling. The fool is not falling. The fool is fully supported. That fool is walking on air. There is magic in the fool. And we're not looking at someone who is falling, and yet we have this perception that we will fall. Every bit of conventional wisdom tells us you will fall, and and we're not falling.
Two things. One is the solid ground underneath you is no more solid than the wall you can't walk through. So even that's an illusion. And let me share a story, which I know you've read Act of Surrender, Susan, so the story will be familiar to you. This goes back to those early years during that time of spiritual and creative awakening, so that would have been in the early to mid-90s, back in the last century. I had a dream. I had a nightmare, rather, because it really was disturbing. And in the dream, I am clinging to the ledge of an office tower. And it's probably an office tower from the because it's pre-modernist, so it's probably an office tower from the 50s, which, of course, is, when I was born. And a voice is saying, let go. And I'm looking down at the cars, many stories below, and I'm thinking, you've got to be expletive deleted, crazy. And I wake up in a sweat, very, very upset. And what I decide to do later that day or the next day is to sit in meditation and take the dream with me and see if I can, from a more conscious place, let go.
Yeah.
So I did this once, could not. Did this twice, could not. You know, my knuckles are white and my fingers are scraped. I cannot let go despite what I feel is important. It's important to do. And, of course, what the fool is doing is letting go. He's surrendering to to a wisdom greater than that of his mind. He's surrendering to the wisdom of his heart. And finally, after the third or fourth attempt, the pain of the resistance, and that's a very key phrase, the pain of the resistance was so great, I basically said, whatever happens, happens. I cannot hold on an innocent longer.
Yes.
And I said, if I go splat, which I fully intended to do, I will go splat. And, you know, we'll see if I'm still here when I open my eyes. And what happened, if you recall from the story, was instead of plummeting down, you know, 30 stories, however many it was, I felt myself, and of course I'm in a kind of a lucid dream meditation kind of experience,
yes,
floating like a feather.
Wow.
And part way down, I felt myself land very gently in what at the time I could only describe as the arms of God. It's not like I saw, you know, big guy with a white beard catch me. I just felt myself land in this loving embrace.
Yeah.
And that goes back to the fool. No, that is the faith. The faith in the leap of faith is that you will not go splat. The faith is that the empty air is no more or less solid than the so-called solid ground you just left.
Yes.
And we all have experiences of that solid ground not being solid. Look at all the people in the last decades who thought they had a job until retirement who lost their jobs.
Exactly.
That was solid ground that wasn't solid. Look at all the people in relationships, in marriages, who, I'm one of them, who entered lovingly into a relationship convinced that this was it and it would never end, and it did.
Yes.
That was solid ground that wasn't solid.
You know, something in that respect that I reflected upon last year, having my father passed away last year, and, you know, my parents were in a very loving long-term marriage, and it dawned on me, that even in a marriage that is destined to last for a very long time, it's very rare for one person, for both people to leave this earth together. And so in a sense, even then, even in those relationships, there are no relationships that are on such solid ground that you will be together, at least on this earth, forever. It's very, very rare. And you know, then, of course, my mother had to find that support, and did,
right.
You know, and it's thriving
right
now. And you know, it's out there. For us, I think that is such the lesson that you shared, that, you know, in the presence of omnipresence, whether you call it God, spirit, the universe, whatever you choose to call it, you can never fall. You may feel like you're falling. It may seem like you're falling. You may even be falling in a sense, but you can never fall. You can never plummet to the bottom, because you are supported in everything. Ultimately, you know, we do reside in the arms of God. And to me, that's a message of your dream and just of trust in that spirit that is here with us and in us.
Yeah, I think the key to remember is that the only solid ground lies within us.
Yes.
There is no solid ground. There is no solid ground in our relationship with anything else. There's no solid there's no solid ground on the floor. There's no solid ground in the wall. There's no solid ground in our job, in our relationship, in our health. The only solid ground is the solid ground that comes from within. And it's that that allows the fool in that in all those tarot images to step off the cliff, to step off the precipice, because he, she knows that really there's no difference between what he stepped off and what he stepped into. It's all the same.
Yes. And, you know, I think that even at a, you know, you can look at this in a microcosm and a macrocosm in a sense, because I think so much now there are those who feel, and this certainly was felt before December 2012, and now we're past that, but it still hasn't changed, that the world itself is hovering on that cliff, whether it be the financials, you know, just all kinds of fear-based things in the world right now, if you let it, if you let it get to you. And yet, if we can have that trust, I mean, how do you view it in the macrocosm? Or is there a macrocosm? Is there really only what's within? I mean, there's
there
the real question,
show?
Isn't
it's
it?
A conversation really I think, I mean, you touched on some important points there. This is very sad and very tragic, which is that pretty much everything out there in the mainstream world, in the conventional world,
mm-hmm.
Appears to exist to support our fear. Let me flip that for a second. I have a much better way of looking at that. Everything exists as an opportunity to get past our fear.
Oh, I like that.
So the world, the media, the political culture, it's all there trying to scare the pants off us. I almost flipped there. To scare the pants off us. And a lot of the time, it succeeds. Because
yeah.
You read the paper, you watch TV, it looks pretty scary out there. So we have two choices. We have several. Well, here are two. We have several choices. One choice, which is not necessarily a bad one, is turn off the TV and turn off. And use the paper for dog training. this is from a former journalist.
Yes, for those who even get the paper anymore, it's become so
that's
rare.
Right. Yeah.
I happen to be one, but I use it for many purposes.
You can also read it online, so you can remove that bookmark from your browser.
That's right. That's right.
That's a new way of doing that. And there's nothing wrong with that. I've done a lot of that myself. Another is to look at everything going on outside us in the world that seems designed to, that seems almost designed as a terrorist does to promote terror, to promote our fear, and say,
yeah.
You know what? You can't have it. You can't have my soul. You cannot scare me. Or, better put still, yes, you're going to. Yes, I'm scared, but no, you will not stop me.
Yes, we own how we choose to react to our own
exactly.
Fear.
Exactly.
I love how this has come. It's almost like it's come, I hate to say it, full circle. I couldn't resist. To the theme of the show. I mean, because that's the whole idea of the frontier beyond fear is not necessarily we acknowledge I still have fear and I have a show about fear. In fact, I used to be a really fearful person and I'm still letting those fears go. I can be afraid in the present day, no doubt. However, it's living in those moments where you know, I really feel there is this frontier, and maybe what it really is it is off the cliff. That frontier exists off the cliff. It's that place of trust. It's like discovering this new place. It's this higher place. I mean, I do feel it's a kind of quantum place. The more that we find it, it has given me tremendous comfort to live in that place. in the moment, and I'm not there every moment, but when I'm there, it's a beautiful, wonderful place that where we are in control and we know it, where we feel it, and that we feel that support. And so, yes, it has kind of come full circle.
Well, you know, you cannot trust and be afraid.
Yeah, interesting. That is a very interesting observation. I've never really thought of it that way.
Because the moment you're afraid is the moment
you're not
you stop trusting.
Wow, that is so true. And yet trust can come to us at any moment. Is that if we're not trusting in a moment, you have the next moment and the next. It's where we are right now. And to me, that's the reassurance, is that so often, don't we catch ourselves, Mark David? It's so easy to be afraid. I mean, it's our natural inclination sometimes to be afraid. And, you know, we've got...
And an inclination that's wonderfully supported.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And you know, and yet we can be conscious. You know, it really has... It's a type of consciousness. And there's certainly things that we can do. I have found if I find myself in a particularly fear-based mood, I go for a walk. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, there was just an article last week that said that walking, and it just proves what I have known, and I've had meditation teachers on this show who've said this, that they have now proven scientifically that walking in a green space actually does put your mind in a meditative state, or it certainly can. I imagine it can't, doesn't always, depending on what's going on, but that you really can reach that quite naturally through walking. And they tested just regular people who were walking through green spaces. So, and there are things that you can do like that, aren't there, Mark David? Things that can help us to get to this place.
Absolutely. I think that, I mean, meditation is certainly one, although I have a huge controversial caveat there, which is that it's very easy to spend 20 minutes of your day every day in a place of, you know, soulful bliss and be a bastard for the other 23 hours and 40 minutes. The key is to be in that space as much of your day, your life as possible. And so the meditation is not an end in itself. Meditation is a tool for extending that space into the rest of your life. But yes, I mean, I do not have a regular meditation practice anymore. It's been a while, but I do go for lots of walks.
Yeah, well, apparently it's as simple as that, Mark David, and they are really, I have felt it, and I think many of us don't have a regular meditative practice, like we have to admit, because I don't, and yet I walk, and it's simple.
I'm a photographer, and I find photography to be meditative, because it means that when I'm out walking, I'm in the moment looking for opportunities for things to photograph. I'm always in the moment.
Yes.
I mean, basically, what will break the fear often is whatever breaks the pattern of what you're doing.
Yes.
So go for a walk, take a shower, take a bath, go running if you run, go pick up a book that has nothing at all to do with what it is you're dealing with. Just do something different.
It's so important not to limit ourselves, too, because I watched how your photography blossomed. I mean, just how you started to, I mean, maybe it's always been with you to some degree, but it certainly seemed to blossom in a way right in front of us, because you started to post more and more pictures, those of us who've known you, and they were beautiful pictures, and you got some wonderful affirmations, and in your heart there's yet another place that you allowed your artistic expression to go. And I honor that you're able to follow those instincts and develop them, which is a thing of beauty.
The wonderful thing for me about photography and visual art, I also draw. I haven't been, but I actually did yesterday for the first time in almost 3 years, is that I don't have the same baggage around them as I have around my writing. I don't consider myself a visual artist, although I am. I don't consider myself a photographer, although I am. But I consider myself a writer with a capital W.
Yes,
so thank you. So, but there's stuff around that for me that there isn't in the other media. But I'm not a trained photographer. Going back to accreditation, I'm not a trained photographer. I'm not a trained visual artist. I've sold photographs. I've sold my artwork. One of the most shocking, in a good way, experiences I had also, which is also I think I also mentioned it in Acts of Surrender, is I spent 30 months traveling full time. This was between late 2004 and toward the end of 2007. I wasn't doing any photography, but doing a lot of drawing. And I was actually happened to be in Albuquerque one week, and I happened to pop into a no longer existing metaphysical bookstore and happened to run across an artist who was mm-hmm. there with her work. And we chatted, and I showed her my stuff. And we hit it off, and I went and joined her and some friends of hers, I think that over the next night at a cafe to hear some music. And I walk in, and Barbara gets up and says to her friends, "I'd like you to meet my artist friend." I kind of look around, who's she talking about?
Wow.
Because
that's really cool.
That was not something that I saw myself as.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I think you and I may have even had this conversation when we were doing coaching book together.
Yes.
I can't tell you the number of writers who have come to me for coaching work over the years who will not attach the word writer to themselves, even published ones. I mean, I had a client who was a published and award-winning short story writer. And she was struggling with a novel. Her first. And it came out during one of our sessions that she could not call herself a writer because, as far as she was concerned, a writer had published a novel and short stories didn't count.
Yes.
So,
isn't that interesting?
You know, so, can we own our power, maybe, please? Can
oh,
I call
that's
myself
so
an
important.
Artist? Can I call myself a photographer? You know, can I call myself these things that I clearly am, but don't fully believe in? I mean, can I call myself a screenwriter? Could I call myself
mm-hmm.
a novelist during all those years when the MoonQuest wasn't published but written? You know, I mean...
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's so important to give yourself permission to know what you are. I mean, and on a metaphysical level, often they say you should be who you wish to be, you know.
Yes,
because that makes you who you are.
Well,
and
in fact, you already are that. What you're doing is shedding the veils that stop you from seeing it.
Yes, so important. And you know, I've been through this, as you know, my coach, which actually was a few years ago. I mean, I haven't published my books yet. I discovered this show. I had other outlets. I wasn't ready. And you know, it's getting closer, but sometimes we go down a path that is so unexpected, and that's what I'm encountering as a writer. And what's happening? You know, now I'm getting to know all these people in publishing, for one, which is really interesting, through this show. And, you know, I'm developing a voice in a different way that I didn't expect. And so there's so many times that occurs, but... You know, so often, I mean, I was a blogger, as you know. I mean, I wrote very openly yet anonymously in very public places. And yet so many bloggers don't want to call themselves writers. I know I still struggle with that. And yet if you watch Julia, you are a writer.
Right. That's right.
You don't need to, You know, although ironically in that movie, she only became a writer when she had a book deal in her head.
Right.
And yet she was a writer all along. And so anyway, you know, we're heading into the last few minutes, and I wanted to catch up real quick on your projects, because I know that you're involved in some exciting work with the Quintana Trilogy. And I want to give you that opportunity to talk about just what you're doing right now and catch us up a little bit.
Okay. Well, briefly, as you mentioned, The Moon Quest is out. It has won awards. I just last week put the finishing touches on the final drafts of the Star Quest and Sun Quest, the other two books in the trilogy. Hopefully, one or both will be out this year. I also finished, put the final touches on the final draft of the three screenplays, Moon Quest, Dark Quest, Sun Quest, and hopefully we will be in officially in pre-production, although we've already done a lot of the pre-production work this year, and we'll be in production by the end of the year or early next year. That's the Quintana Trilogy story. The memoir, Act of Surrender, a Writer's Memoir, is out in ebook only at this time. And I've gotten some pretty amazing feedback, which is always wonderful. And as I mentioned on my blog last week, having finished a writing project, which is really the Quintana Trilogy, that's been part of my life for 19 years, I'm kind of in a void. I have stepped off the cliff. And you remember in the old cartoons where the cartoon character would run off the cliff and not realize he was off the cliff and he was still kind of running?
Oh, yes.
That's kind of where I am now. I mean, I there's certainly work for me to be doing in getting moving forward with the film projects, but I'm kind of open to what's next, like the fool that I am. I don't know what's next, and I'm like the human I am. I really, 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 really want to know. And like the fool that I am, I'm doing my best to trust in the emptiness that I have stepped into, and to know, because it's always happened in my life, that those arms of God, however you define God, are waiting for me just a few feet down.
And there's the trust.
There's the trust.
Yeah,
which
and
is not
24/7.
I wish I could say it was 24/7. It's not. But you know, I guess if it were, I wouldn't need to be here learning it.
Yeah, I guess we wouldn't be having this human experience. I think of that often too. Is that you know, if we had everything, if we were fully aware of everything that we could do, and could do it, I'm not so sure. We really wouldn't be having the human experience we're having. Although I think that it's the discovery of that. That's what makes this experience so amazing is that, you know, the more that we discover what we're capable of. And, you know, in a way, as you were talking about coming off the cliff like that, in a way you've written yourself off the cliff because you are so prolific. You finished everything, Mark David.
I mean, we
admire your I find that inspiring how you're able to write at such an amazing level that you can just finish projects like that. It's so many of us as writers greatly admire that, let me tell you.
Well, thank you. Well, one of the things that I do that I haven't done very much in recent years is draw, and that's on my website. And one of the things that I used to do fairly regularly, especially when I was traveling, was do energy portraits of other people, which really were energetic representations of what they were ready to step into. And as I was driving down to Starbucks, where I decided I was going to create the first energy portrait for myself I had done in, since early 2005, this phrase came to me that I would be drawing in what was next. So that's what I did yesterday. I took myself off to Starbucks, which was nice and quiet because it was Easter, and pulled out my drawing tools, which had been gathering dust for 3 years, and I drew in what's next. Now, right now, it's not representational, so I have no idea what it actually is, but it was an energetic kind of expression. And if you go to markdavidgerson.com/portraits.html, The image on that page, I'm going to post it on Facebook later today as well, but the image on that page is the drawing I did yesterday. So I know we're out of time, but look me up on Facebook, Mark David Gerson, all one word. Would love to connect with you there. Check out my website, markdavidgerson.com. In fact, I'm Mark David Gerson, generally one word, pretty much anywhere online. So you'll find me, and it'd be great to connect with all of you who are listening.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I'm going to carry this show just a minute or two into the archive because we have so many podcast listeners out there. But I'm glad that you had the opportunity to let the people listening live know where they can find your work. Just a reminder to those of you listening to the podcast, there is a link on the show page to markdavidgerson.com where, you know, you can learn all about Mark David. And I also wanted to note that if you want to learn more about the Frontier Beyond Fear, you can go to frontierbeyondfear.com, where all the old shows, including shows with Mark David, I'm in the process, Mark David, of improving my archive. You will soon have a dedicated page, as will all the people who have been on my show. Oh, yes. I am working on it as we speak.
Be sure to send me a link.
I will. And all of your shows will be on there so that people can easily find them. But they're also readily found right now on frontierbeyondfear.com. I have links to every one of your shows on the main page right now where they can look and listen to your, quote, foolish wisdom multiple times because we've had the opportunity to speak a few times over the course of this show. You were actually one of my earliest guests, and I really appreciated that. So anyway, let me just express my gratitude and in a way, let me just celebrate who you are, Mark David, because, you know, you have had an impact not only personally on my life because you've been my coach, my friend, you've been here through the years for me, but you have inspired so many. And I know that you will only inspire more people. The more that you step off into your void, the more you help fill the voids of others. And I just wanted to say that, you know, a heartfelt thank you. And again, a celebration of who you are in this world. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan.
And with that said, I'm going to leave it to you. If you want to leave just a few more comments with our podcast audience, if there are final thoughts from the wisdom of the fool, is there anything you would like to leave us with to close out today's show?
Sure. You know, there's a reason why my memoir called itself, of course, I'm not in charge of anything, called itself Acts of Surrender, because as I was writing this, this book I did not want to write, I might add, I began to see the pattern of surrender, even unconscious before this spiritual awakening in my life. And so one of the things that the fool is doing through his trust, her trust, through stepping off the cliff, is trusting in the story that is our story to live and surrendering to it. And so what I would leave you with is not the notion of surrender with a white flag and your hands up in the air, but the notion of surrendering to your deepest heart's desires, your most profound passions, and not letting your fear of consequences, your fear of fallout, your fear of what other people might say or do get in the way. Feel your fear, walk through it to the other side, and which is a paraphrase for the Moon Quest, and step into your destiny, whatever that is for you.
Well, thank you. I think those are words that we all need to hear, and it's certainly no April Fool's. I mean, you speak truth. Let's just put it that way. So thank you again, Mark David, for being here today.
It's always a joy, Susan.
Well, thank you. So I hope that you take care, and I really look forward to your next time on
the show. Absolutely.
So thank you again.
Thanks, Susan.
Just a few notes as we close out, just some procedural notes. The next show will be Saturday, get my dates straight, Saturday, April 6th at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. We're going to have another special Saturday night broadcast, this time with numerologist Rob Ragazine. And he has been on the show before and is quite popular. He knows his craft very well, and he will be interacting with callers. So you will be able to bring your questions to Rob this Saturday night, April 6th at 7 p.m. And again, do visit. I encourage you to visit frontierbeyondfear.com. There is also an opportunity to support the show on that page. If this show is speaking to your heart, I very much welcome your support of the show for the maintenance costs. So, and all of that exists on frontierbeyondfear.com, as well as an access to the archive, featured shows, all kinds of interesting information, and it only continues to grow. So I just want to thank the audience out there for your support and for being part of what really is a co-creation. As we all aim to live in this space that truly is not a fool's paradise. It is the frontier beyond fear, and it is the place of our dearest dreams of our hearts. And may you find that space within you today. Thanks again for being here.